And it is time for the Valley Talk program, as we're going to talk with the fire chief, Shane Helstab, today. And, well, Shane, first of all, welcome. And it's never a dull moment in the fire world, is it?
No, it definitely is not. I think, obviously, you might have found out about that yesterday. So, yeah, it's every day can be a challenge.
I will commend you being out there watching the firefighters. Boy, as soon as they got out there, they were able to hammer that fire down pretty quick, and it was pretty impressive to watch them work.
Yeah, you know, the guys that we got, pretty darn good. Unfortunately, this spring we have had our experiences with grass fires and wildland fires. So for a lot of them, even our newer guys, it's already becoming kind of old hat.
Sure.
You know, they jump in those rigs. They know exactly what they got to do when they deploy. And the guys have gotten really good on communication side of things. So getting out there, assessing a plan. And I know Jim Peralt out there kind of as the incident commander on that one, and it's within the city, so we take the fire truck, and did not take him and Garrett Bankston very long to realize that, yeah, we might have a lot of water, but we don't have the mobility that was needed. So they were able to call the rest of the guys in and then use the wildland rigs to be able to contain that fire rather quick.
And the equipment that you have really afforded you the capability to knock that fire down relatively quickly.
Yeah, it really did. We've got a couple of Rangers, and then we've got a one-ton Chevy that we call Unit 6, and then our Engine 4, which would have been the big white truck that was out there. Those ones, they can pump a lot of water. They can, and they're mobile. You know, it was the biggest thing. They can get around. So working in tandem, working in teams, they can really knock down a lot of fire pretty quick.
And obviously, being right next to the railroad tracks, it's not exactly easy territory to navigate too.
No, and that was, I think, one of the first things that Jim found out was just, again, limited access to be able to get in there. And then with the way the weather was working against them, you know, having to fight, usually we try to come in from upwind on a lot of that kind of stuff. And with that one, it was going to be kind of tricky. So we did have to come in from downwind on that. And the guys did a fantastic job. I was out there this morning looking around, just sizing up everything when with a little bit of daylight, and yeah, they knocked it down. And like I said, it was contained pretty good.
It was, and if it keeps going to the west there a little bit, now you're looking at there's a few hotels in the area, and then if it jumps tracks, you have the UMC grounds there as well, and I don't know, you never know, but
all it takes is a spark, and there's a lot of guys out there right now that can tell you it's all it takes is a spark, and it'll. We've had it where it's jumped a ditch that's had water in it that's 6 feet wide, and it's just taken one ember to get across that ditch, and all of a sudden we got to get on the other side and start knocking it down over there. So, yeah, we're not going to discount anything. Green Up Now is helping, but at the same point in time, there's still access to all that dead stuff from last fall, so it doesn't take much.
No, and you can definitely tell when it hit the cattails.
that is the report that I've been given. Is, yeah, we thought maybe we had a chance, and then it hit cattails, and no, we knew we needed everybody.
Yeah, it it accelerated pretty quickly when it hit that area, but that's for sure. And the reminder here is how dangerous burning, especially within city limits, can be. And you have burning ordinances for that reason alone.
Yeah, we do. And so within that, I did want to just touch on that a little bit. When we're talking about burning ordinance, usually we're dealing with campfires, stuff like that, that, you know, people want to have in their backyards. When we do that, it's got to be dry firewood. We don't want to have it with leaves or grass or anything that can generate a lot of that smoke. That's where the disturbances come in, the complaints, and then that's when we get called out. And then we're going to come out and we're going to have to tell you to either, we're going to have you put it out. We can't have the smoke if you're disturbing neighbors. And it's just kind of a common courtesy type of deal to your neighbors. So just dry firewood, it minimizes the smoke. It still allows you to have a good time hanging around in your backyard. But just dry firewood, and I mean, if it's twigs, it's twigs. But just leaves and grass are not something. They just generate so much smoke for what they're burning that it just ends up being a disturbance.
Well, and you can smell the difference in the two fires too, can't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you definitely can. So visual is a big thing, and then, yeah, you can definitely smell. And with that, when you do have a campfire, we've had a couple in the past couple of years where those campfires get set up maybe a little too close to a structure or something like that, and siding starts getting hot, and people kind of start to forget about like just the radiant heat and how hot things can get. So making sure that if you do have a fire pit or a fire ring, that you go ahead and make sure it's a safe distance away. You know, you get those portable ones now that are on wheels or raised up a little bit with the cage around them and a lid. Yeah, just move them to a safe spot and go ahead and enjoy your campfire.
What would be a rule of thumb as far as far away from a how far away from a structure would you like it? Obviously, the farther the better, but
25 feet would be ideal. Okay. You know, and if for some reason if your backyard doesn't allow that, it's common sense again, and just keeping it as far away as you possibly can. With that, then also having something, whether it's a fire extinguisher or, you know, at this time of year, if you can have a garden hose that's hooked up, that's readily available just in case, it's always nice to have something like that.
Yeah, like you said, a spark, that's all it takes. Yep. And so if you have that hose, you can put it out hopefully quickly.
Yep. Yeah.
So just being ready to have capability to put out a fire if it does spread outside that ring or
fire pit. And it has been nice. I mean, we do have people that, you know, residents in town that call me, hey, can we burn? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can burn, but then we kind of run through the list again and just make sure, yes, it's dry wood. Do you have something there to put it out in case something happens? And then when you get done at the end of the night, knocking it down. That's a big thing, too, where you get done, you're tired, fire's still going a little bit, and it's like, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Please take the extra 60 seconds that it's going to take to just disrupt the wood pile a little bit so it's straight down to embers and let it cool down. Dump some water on it. Get it cooled off before you go inside for the night.
Especially with the wind we have, that can really stoke a fire up pretty quick.
Yeah, these next couple of days are definitely going to be good indicators on how fast, you know, and how far a spark can even fly.
Sure. So the burning ordinance, is there anything else that people, the citizens of the city should know?
No, that should pretty much cover up a lot of that just for campfires and stuff like
that. And if they ever have any questions, you guys are, you always have somebody there and you're always ready to answer any questions people have.
Yeah, we got guys there 24/7. So if there's any questions, yeah, please don't hesitate. Call the fire hall. Better safe than sorry.
We sort of touched on this here with the grass fires. You've been pretty busy, unfortunately, but that's just part of Minnesota, Northwest Minnesota, especially in the spring. And you've been working with the DNR on some of those, and tell us more about that.
Okay, yeah. So with the DNR, they've came out with a new deal where anytime we have a grass fire, we got to report it within 24 hours. And they're very good. If anybody, I think you guys have a link to their website or Minnesota State Fire Danger and Regulations website that they have, they update that now quite oftenly. That used to be something that they would update at like 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, and it was updated for the day, and that was it. Mm-hmm. Now what you're starting to see is that page actually refreshes every 5 minutes.
Wow.
So it really keeps it current and really up to date. So we've seen it a couple times where we've had guys that have wanted to burn in the morning, but the DNR says, no, that's not going to happen. And then by the afternoon, the humidity level comes up, the winds maybe die down a little bit, and the forecast is a little bit more favorable, and then it changes, and then they go to a permitted burn or a variance burn if it was in a no-burn zone.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are then able throughout the day to be able to check that and see, and then all of a sudden there's a chance that if it does, the weather cooperates, they can go ahead and burn.
It's also a valuable site if you're going to be going camping somewhere, and nice to know before you go.
Yeah, it is. And it, like I say, it's one of those, you can pull it up on your phone just as easy as you can on the computer. It's something you can look at, and yeah, it'll give you really current information.
How about the permit process? Tell us more about that.
That's really turned into a big thing now, and it's working out fantastic. We're getting a lot of cooperation on that, and that's... usually most of that's all about rural areas. So when we're talking either with farmers or residents that live out there, if you're going to have a fire, usually when you get out in the country, the fires seem to get a little bit bigger than they do in town. So, with piled brush and stuff like that. So all that simply is you can do it one of two ways. They can either register for that permit, online. The DNR charges $5. We like the second option, which is come down and visit with your firefighters and we'll give you one for free. And then the nice thing is with that is usually when we've got you in there talking and we get your information, we actually will pull it up on a map.
Okay.
And then we can actually put a specific location on our permit. So if one firefighter takes and issues the permit, the other four or five guys are able to look at that permit. If the guy doesn't call in the next day or two, he can look and make, oh, pull it up on the map and can see exactly where that guy's going to be burning.
Okay.
Because we've got a description on there, and then we got a visual indicator on what it is. And it's just a good way. You get in touch with your fire department, and it gives us a little bit of knowledge. And then it also helps with the process we have. We let Polk County know that, you know, somebody's activating a permit. And so then they've got the same type of operating systems as we do. They throw it up on their map. And then when somebody gets done burning, they just call Polk County, and Polk County will take it off the map. And it's really helped the last couple of years. Anybody, you know, after that Oxcart fire that happened, anytime anybody saw smoke, they were calling, going, hey, I think there's a fire.
I can imagine.
Well, then we had to reference and be like, no, we got a permitted burn going on out there. Everything's going to be fine. So it really helps. And if they, even if they dial 911, that's why Polk County, we let them know. Because if Polk County takes the 911 call for somebody reporting that, they get to look on their map and make, no, it's a permitted burn. Everything's fine out there. So,
and obviously that person, if it does get out of hand, they call.
Oh, yeah, they
right
know
away.
How to, they will call 911, you know, and then it's like, oh, it's a permitted burn. And then Polk County's like, no, you got to go. So we've already had one of those this year.
Okay. So, and that does happen.
It does.
And fire is unpredictable at times. So.
Yeah, it really can be. You know, and like I said, we were talking about how dry it is and wind. Yeah, a couple sparks, and next thing you know, you're going to lose another 5-10 feet, and it maybe gets out of control relatively quick.
Yep, or it jumps, like you said, over a road. Or
Yep.
So we've seen that happen. The statewide fire danger and burning restrictions. We sort of touched on the website that the DNR has, and this is something we had a lot of, well, still do, a statewide fire danger across the entire state, not just our area.
Yeah, and now, like, if you look on it today, there's burn permits. All burn permits are allowed, and I believe that's because we do have enough green up. I know we were talking with Ben Lang from the Bemidji office, who's kind of in charge, and he had been talking. We had a couple of different farmers that wanted to burn off rather large sections of corn stubble and stuff like that. And being able to have direct discussions with him and kind of get their information and their knowledge on what decisions and or how they go about making their decisions and, you know, talking about green up and stuff. And, you know, he's asking, hey, just ask that farmer if he can wait 1 week. We're going to get a shot of rain here. Everything's going to continue to grow. That is really going to give us a good buffer. And then being able to contact these farmers and have that conversation. And everyone that we've had that conversation with has been more than understandable, knowing, yeah, you know what, I can wait for another week. So, which, when you think they want to get in the fields as fast as they do, it kind of catches you off guard, thinking, I don't know what we're going to do here. But no, every one of them has been cordial and understanding, so it's been fantastic.
Well, that's a nice thing with the growers in our area. They get it.
Yep, they do.
Yeah, they don't want to be that guy that all their friends make fun of for starting a fire that gets away. So I'm sure that's part of it, too. So. With storms, you're not just the fire department, also you're the head of emergency management as well, and we have those tornado warnings, severe thunderstorm warnings, and there's many times during the summer you have to activate the storm shelter, and so that's something else you guys do.
Yeah, and so kind of as what I'm hoping, we're kind of coming out of grass fire season, you know, this is where our focus may change, is to having some severe weather coming through. And we do have our storm shelter, and that is located in the basement of City Hall. We put signs out, contact CareWex, try to get that information out as fast as possible, letting people know. And that's something where, depending on what type of a thunderstorm or tornado, you know, if something like that is coming through, we will get that shelter open right away. We work very well. The PD has been fantastic about assisting, going through the trailer parks and stuff, making sure that people are alerted, knowing that there's this impending weather coming.
And with the severe weather, it can pop up out of nowhere. So it's something that there's been many times over the past couple summers where all of it, there's no watch or warning or anything, and next thing you know, it's in Grand Forks coming our way.
Yeah, it can be, and it's, you can see how fast some of those storms will travel. So, you know, we throw a 20-mile radius around Crookston. So But we also follow the National Weather Service. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're putting that warning out in our area, okay, well, that's kind of putting the fire department on high alert, going, okay, you know, we start pulling up the monitors and monitoring mm-hmm. the weather pretty much 24/7 at that point in time. And then we can be in contact with the weather service at that. And just being able to have that phone call to see what they're really thinking and stuff, maybe before really an issue comes out, or maybe they got a better idea on what track it's going to mm-hmm. take. And so, yeah, I mean, having that, it's going to give us a little bit of a step up so we can get things open and in place. The Weather Service now has changed some of their alerting mm-hmm. systems. I'm sure you've seen that, where now it's going to have to be a destructive mm-hmm. thunderstorm before we actually start getting that on our phones.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh. So I've been kind of diving into that and talking with a couple of the meteorologists over in Grand Forks about that. And just something that nationwide study that they kind of went through and they yep. changed. And I was like, oh, well, there's still a pretty good chance we're going to get thunderstorms. They're going to be just under this threshold. Okay, well, you know, we're going to have to see how those alerts pop up yep. and stuff. But, you know, city of Crookston, we look at sustained winds of 70 miles an hour. That's not going to change. We're going to keep yep. that there. We start talking about tornadoes. I know we had a discussion a couple of years ago. If we get tornadoes that pop up that are tracking towards Crookston, yep, yep, we're going to be sounding the sirens mm-hmm. and we're going to make sure that we get that info out right away. We've had some that have popped up south of town and they're moving away from us.
Yep.
Well, at that point in time, we're going to let Polk County know that that's what's out there. Mm-hmm. But then we got to get the communities that might be in the path of that tornado, make them aware of things. So if it's not looking like it's a potential threat to Crookston, you might see one, and yep. it might fall within that 20-mile radius. But if it's not going to affect the city of Crookston, we're probably not going to go and start blowing sirens yep. and stuff. If the potential is that siren or those straight or tornado or straight line winds, if they are going to hit Crookston, that is when you're going to start to see those sirens go off and the storm shelter and stuff ordered.
And I think that caused confusion a couple of summers ago when you could see the funnel cloud, but it wasn't a threat to Crookston proper.
Yes.
So that's why the sirens never went off.
Yep. So, yep, and that's what that was. The guys had been watching during the day, and then we actually had the phone call that came in, and we got the location on it, which way was it traveling and mm-hmm. everything. It was not coming towards Crookston, yep. so it was like, okay. And Chief at the time was like, not much we can do if it's not affecting. No. We don't want to start crying wolf on this
yep.
if it's not actually going to impact the community. So.
And that is when the sirens will go off, when there is direct threat to the city of Crookston.
Yep.
So.
And realistically, I mean, a little bit of the surrounding area yep. as well. But, yeah, and those sirens, you know, those are outdoor warning mm-hmm. sirens. So the biggest reason they're in place is public safety with the people that are outdoors, that yep. when you hear those sirens, it is time to activate. I want a little caveat to that. Unless it's 1 o'clock on the first Wednesday of the month, that's when we do our monthly test of the sirens. Yep. So that's the city or the fire department and Polk County test the sirens the first Wednesday of the month at 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Any other time, if you hear those, yep. we need to start taking cover. We need to take protective mm-hmm. life-saving actions.
And unless you're testing them after you fixed one, which happens rarely.
It happens rarely, but it will be happening again here.
Okay.
So, but we will get that information yep. out to you guys to let you know that we're going to be testing those sirens and try to get that information out mm-hmm. so the community is aware that we might be testing them. We try to keep it probably around that middle of afternoon anyways.
Yeah.
Try to make the timeline synonymous, but you just never know. It just depends on what time we get it fixed.
Sure. And that's one thing always, and that's why you test them to
yeah.
see if the last thing you need is if there is a tornado coming and the public alert, the siren's not working. So
yeah, we want to make sure they're ready to go.
Yeah, that's sort of important to the citizens, that's for sure. Well, this sort of ties in together too, and the siren activation, protection of life, public warning. We sort of covered all of that in the call to take shelter. But is there anything else that we should talk about in those topics?
No, and realistically, we talk about the outdoor warning sirens. If we've got that type of weather that is coming, the sirens are just kind of one part of it. They talk about the IPAWS, and that's integrated public alert and warning systems. That's what'll pop up on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that can come from the National Weather Service. And so if there is impending weather like that, if you hear sirens going and you're getting alerts on your phone, might as well put on a helmet.
Yeah.
So it's pretty inevitable at that point in time that we have got some very severe weather that is going to come through. And they've changed that, the thunderstorm modeling in their categories now. So they've got I think it's dangerous thunderstorm classification. So they've got that. So that's ramped up now where it's going to be 80-mile-an-hour winds, and they're talking 2 3/4-inch size hail. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the size of a baseball. Well, we're going to be keeping a little closer eye on that,
yeah.
And we're sticking with our original, what we have right now as our action plan for weather like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when we start talking about thunderstorms like that, that's usually when you start hearing the words like supercell come
yeah.
around,
mm-hmm.
and then when you're talking about that, yeah, then you're starting to tie in these tornadoes and stuff like that that can end up happening or being a byproduct of these big storms that come through the area.
And I served on the IPAWS committee for a couple of years, and I think the reason why they're changing, and this is a national thing too, but the thunderstorm, it got to be where there is a thunderstorm in a lot of these places, you know, 5-6 times a day.
Yep.
So people are just, oh, it's another thunderstorm. And so that's, I think, why they're trying to change the warning levels anyway, just to, again, you don't want to cry wolf because it's just a good old-fashioned thunderstorm.
People check their phones and go, yeah, thunderstorm
nothing.
Warning. Okay,
yep.
Fine.
Whoop-y-doo.
And just kind of
yep.
walk it off.
Yeah.
Don't even think about it. Where now, if you get that alert, you need to be prepared.
Yep. And we say we'll keep you updated too and let you know. But with the, the straight line wind, 70 miles an hour, that can do a lot of damage.
It really can. And especially when we start talking like in trailer parks where mm-hmm. there's no foundations or anything like that. If we get sustained winds that are like that, yeah, it can end up. And even with when we start talking about leaf out on trees,
mm-hmm.
leaves take a lot of wind resistance, and that's when you start seeing trees falling, and then, you know, that's when we'll get our calls for power lines down or trees across branches, and then there's arcs and sparks and everything else, and, well, we show up with water, and water and electricity don't work very well, so our idea is just to, you know, we got to secure the area, and then, you know, it's phone calls to the power companies and try to get some assistance and go from there to isolate and do what we can, and tell you what, the power company around here is fantastic,
yep.
Great communication, and the trick is when, you know, we get a windstorm or something like that that comes through, well, it's not just our area that's dealing with it, so they might already be called out on something. But, you know, the guys will have to sit, and they'll keep the area secure and stuff like that until we can get the power company there to isolate it and change it. So
yeah, it just doesn't affect Crookston only, a lot of these storms.
Yeah,
so.
And that can be the trick. You know,
yeah.
it affects you, and it's tough to not think about anybody but yourself in the situation that you're in. And, you know, you try to realize that we have a whole community and a, you know, whole county and,
mm-hmm.
you know, multi-counties that can be dealing with these same type of issues at the same time. And, you know, a lot of these businesses and companies kind of stretch thin on manpower in the first place. And then, you know, they start getting calls in different areas. Yeah, it might be a little while, but, you know, understand that they're coming and they want to fix the issue just as bad as you do.
And most thunderstorms, it seems like they don't happen at 1 in the afternoon when everybody's working, too.
No, it would be convenient if they did. But no, that's kind of like we talk about, like, CO detectors and stuff. When do mm-hmm. those low battery alarms go off? Well, that's usually programmed, I think, for 2 o'clock in the morning. You know?
That's usually the case, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like to keep the guys at the fire hall on their feet.
Oh, all day.
Yeah. Anything else to add before we let you go? There are a lot of valuable information here for the public.
No, I think we can wrap her up for the day.
Okay. And we should ask yesterday, all the firefighters made it through fighting that fire without injury or any...
Everybody made it home safe. I don't have any paperwork laying on my desk, so that's always,
that's always
a good thing.
Yep. No, just watching the guys, it's, I guess, the fun part of the job is to see the guys in action doing what they do and doing it so well. It's pretty cool to see them and how it all... I call them walkie-talkies, but talking back and forth and the communication, it is really a true team effort.
It definitely is.
And the police as well.
Yeah. Yep, I'm saying the policeman that was out there, well, he's also on the association, so he's also a paid-on-call firefighter, so I think he's going to get a little guff down at the police department, but it's moth to a flame for him. So, you know, but it... he's also a great asset when he's there because he can just kind of fall in line and he can help us when we do talk about security and just making sure everybody's safe. He can be a great asset while he's out there. He wants to get involved, you know, and I think people will see that. But at the same point in time, you know, it's great being able to work with both agencies between the police department, the fire department, and anytime we need the PD and we call, they're right there and they're doing exactly everything that we need them to do. So, you know, it's a benefit, you know, it's a small community, but we all know each other and we are all working towards the same goal, and it's fantastic.
No, we got a bunch of great guys at the fire department and also at the Crookston Police Department as well. And it's always nice to see how well the two entities work together. So, as you said, working towards the same goal to keep Crookston safe. Yep. So, well, thank you for all you do. We appreciate it. And hopefully you and the police department, it's two of the city jobs that we don't want you guys working. Which is nice.
Our day-to-day stuff, we'll work on that all day. But it's this extracurricular, we can tame that down, we'll be fine.
But when you are called, we know we're in good hands. So thank you for everything that you and the department do.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you. That is, again, Fire Chief Shane Hellstep. How long have you been Fire Chief now?
The longest 5 months of my life.
A little more gray hair, or...
That's, you can hear the comments from the guys going, oh, there's another one. Oh, look, it's like one more. Yeah, so...
But so 5 months in, and everything going well?
It's challenging, but I'm loving every minute of it.
I suppose the first year is always the hardest, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. Yeah. So. Hopefully, and that's what I, you know, talking with guys, I guess, just a little blurb on that. It's talking with guys, there's a lot of support down there, you know, and I can vent, or not vent, but I can try and talk through things with guys, and it's what they're all saying. They're like, dude, we can't change the world in a day, you know, so we're just pacing ourselves out on this, and it's working out really well, but it's extremely beneficial to have the support of all the firefighters that are down there. So I haven't messed up too bad because I'm still getting the support. So, you know, I'm going to use that as long as I can.
And the last question here is, are you going to grow a mustache like Jimmy Perrault?
No. Okay. There is no way. A, it would be gray. And B, no, I just, anybody that has, there's people out there that have seen me with a mustache. Yeah, no, that just does not work on this face. Yeah. So, no, it'll be clean shaven.
I'm in the same boat, too. So, all right, Shane, thanks for talking with us. We went a little long, but a lot of good stuff to talk about. And, we'll talk to you again soon.
I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. That is Fire Chief Shane Hellstep. We thank him for joining us here on the Valley Talk program. And, again, a lot of good information there.